I'm Paul Wiegraf, Director of the Delaware Division of the Arts, and your host for today. Joining me in the studio today is the General Director of Opera Delaware, Brendan Cook. Welcome, Brendan.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be here.
So glad to have you here in the studio today to talk about the, correct me if I'm wrong, 11th oldest opera company in the United States.
By our math, that is true. I was just sharing that when I started, we were the 14th oldest. Now we're the 11th. It's not a race we want to win, but it means that we've survived where some others haven't. We're approaching our 75th anniversary next year.
So. And survived in what has been in recent years a really innovative series of programs. But let's go back to the beginning.
Absolutely.
How did Opera Delaware get started?
In 1945, it was started by a bunch of local artisans under the guidance of Chick Laird. I believe their initial performances were at Breck's Mill.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in those days. It was a predominantly volunteer endeavor. And I bet it was just a great deal of fun. It was 1945. They brought in a touring production of Carmen from Opera Boston, and they supplemented with local chorus and had so much fun that they sort of kept doing it. And frankly, there are lots of other people more appropriate to talk to about the earlier days than me. I always love running into them and hearing the stories, but I've only been on the scene since about 2012.
So that's interesting, though, to hear Chick Laird's name, because he also was instrumental in the founding of the Brandywiners, which go back just about as far, and they're still performing annually out at Longwood Gardens.
Indeed, yeah.
So Opera Delaware started 80, how many years ago again?
Well, we're 2020 will be our 75th anniversary.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. And in your time here, there have been some significant changes in how the operations happen. But let's talk about sort of how opera has evolved in the American cultural scene over the last 75 years.
Sure. I mean, it's
just briefly.
But. It's hard to do that briefly. I mean, it's an ever-changing playing field. Mm-hmm. There was a culture study that came out I think it was last year, that said that about 2% of the American population went to an opera in the previous year. And mm-hmm. That's a little soul-crushing to hear, but it also it's a reality. I think we all compete for people's time. And I think in a day and age when entertainment is so readily available at the tip of a finger, it's a challenge sometimes to get people to corner off a piece of their life to spend time with us in the theater. Those who do, as you know, are just so richly rewarded for making that investment. But yeah, it's a perpetual challenge to introduce new people to the art form, because there are some occasionally unfair preconceptions about what opera is. 99.44% of them are not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is an art form for everybody, mm-hmm. and everybody should be able to identify with these characters and this incredible music. So the other thing that has happened a lot recently is there's been a huge increase of contemporary work being written. We're focusing on some of that this year in our season, but the canon of contemporary opera has just absolutely exploded over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lot of interesting stuff for us to explore.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that opera is an art form for everyone. I would venture to say that opera is also probably one of the most all-inclusive art forms. It includes music, theater, drama, the visual arts. Could you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean,
I know it impacts, you know, production costs and everything else.
You went right to the cost. I mean, it is probably the most expensive art form because of that. I mean, opera comes from the Latin word meaning work,
mm-hmm.
Plural.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these works are coming together. You have a symphony orchestra in the pit. You have these magnificent singers on stage in handmade costumes. You've got the crew moving the scenery. I mean, they're just all of these elements. And it does make it rather expensive, but I'd also argue that it's what makes it special. And that when you're in the audience, if you have your eyes open and you're invested in what you're seeing, you realize that you're part of an incredible value proposition, and that there's just simply no way that your ticket sales only supported what you're seeing on stage. So I think there's a wow factor that comes with opera. If you're willing to go into it and look at what you see on the stage is the tip of the iceberg. But if you let your mind go to the effort that goes into creating this evening that exists for 2.5 hours and then is over. And if you, you know, if you weren't there, you missed it. You can't, you can't stream it. You can't rewind and see it later. So it is a financial dilemma, but I also think it's one of the things that it's one of our best chances to bring in new audiences and get them hooked when we get them there. Just the sheer wonder of all of these different elements that come together to create this thing that we call opera. It's really thrilling.
And the other thing about opera that is unique, especially today, I mean, I have background in musical theater, but I mean, the opera voice is trained as an instrument. It doesn't rely on microphones and, you know, mixers and everything else. Could you speak to that a little bit? Because
yeah,
I know you're operatically trained.
Well, I was. Yeah, I was a professional singer for about 20 years. And it's, I think it's one of the biggest sort of tricks and tools that we have in our new audience cultivation strategies. It's just the athletic nature of what an opera singer has to do. They have to use these two tiny little muscles in their throat, but the full force of their body to project this sound over a full symphony orchestra without the benefit of amplification, usually in a foreign language, while wearing a big costume and, you know, doing all of the other things that come with this. But there is nothing more thrilling than when you're in a theater and you hear a singer who sort of has that fifth gear, you know, and there's a big ensemble going, but then this soprano comes out with this note that's 10 times louder than everybody else. And it's, I compare it a lot to, athletic endeavors. I'm in awe when I see a quarterback throw a ball down the field 50 yards while getting hit, you know, and put it into this small area that only the receiver can catch it. I make that comparison all the time with what opera singers have to do and the level of physical training that is necessary to do this, and just the amount of physical capital that it takes to perform. It's absolutely exhausting, but it's thrilling. And there's no place better in my mind on the East Coast, if not the entire country, to experience that than the magnificent Grand Opera House, where literally you can sit in the last row and hear the people on stage as if they're as close as you and I are today.
It's really remarkable. Right. Now let's turn to Opera Delaware itself and how it has been reshaped during your time here, because I believe you came in at a time when there was still a 3 or 4 opera season, and it's a totally different animal today.
Yeah, we had gone down to 2 operas and a number of ancillary events throughout the year with 3 performances of each. In 2016, we decided to sort of take a bold move and capitalize on our geography. This is no disrespect to the old company, but sometimes I joke that our marketing strategies were how do we avoid losing people to Philadelphia and New York? And in 2016, we said, well, what if we made it appealing for Philadelphia and New York to come here? So we followed the model of some other companies and went to a festival model, which means that in a compressed period of time, we have multiple offerings so that if you live in Baltimore, D.C., you can come here and spend a weekend and see 2 operas at one time. And the strategy has really paid off in terms of out-of-town visitors. The wonderful thing for us is that we see Opera Delaware serving as the catalyst for people to come here and see all of the other incredible embarrassment of cultural riches that we have in the region. So it's been a thrill to sort of play a small part in exposing the region to what you and I know we have here, just in as I said, an embarrassing level of riches.
And you have other activities going on. I know at the time of this airing, you will have had I believe, Young Singers presentation.
Yes. So this year we have started our Young Artist Training Program, which is essentially, we have 7 young singers who are postgraduate degree students and sort of on the cusp of major international careers, but just need a little more time need a few months to focus on only singing and mm-hmm. not waiting tables or
right.
temping.
Sure.
So these seven young artists will perform a scenes program, but they're also available to us to go out and do community outreach initiatives. And they all have pretty important roles to play in the context of the festival as well. They're either singing supporting roles, in some cases leading roles, and in most cases covering the leading roles in the festival. So if an artist gets a cold or something like that, we have a safety valve here in town. Mm-hmm. Very excited to be able to add that element this year.
Yeah. Well, I want to turn to your upcoming festival, but first remind our listeners that you are tuned into Delaware State of the Arts here on News Radio 1450 WILM and 1410 WDOV. Our guest in the studio today is the General Director of Opera Delaware, Brendan Cook. Brendan, I want to go down the path of the upcoming festival, but first point out or ask you to talk a little bit about the national recognition you've been getting in the past couple of years. Pretty exciting.
Yeah, we've been very blessed. One of our goals when we shifted to festival was to try to get some of that third party approval from out of area publications, and we set out to our goal was to have 3 out of area reviews in our first festival season, and we had 30, including 3 international reviews. So I just love having meetings with corporate partners or with politicians where I can pull out a French publication that in their section where they're reviewing operas, they're listed by city, and it says Venice, Wilmington, Berlin. So we're very proud about that. We've also been very fortunate to have 4 years in a row of competitive funding from the National Endowment for the Arts through their artworks grant track. And last year, we were absolutely delighted to be selected to participate in a national radio broadcast where our 2017 production of Semiramide was sent to a national audience. Essentially, when the Met Opera is not running their Saturday broadcasts, there's an outfit out of Chicago that will syndicate some material, and we were invited to participate in that. We've been invited back next year for 3 national radio broadcasts.
Wow!
So
that's
super excited.
Yeah. That's great. So you'll be able to use operas you've done and recorded and for those broadcasts.
Exactly. Yeah, we record an archival recording of everything
right.
that we do, and we've been invited again to have 3 Saturdays of just wonderful institutional marketing opportunities mm-hmm. for us next mm-hmm. year.
Now, I'm just curious, does the organization that coordinates this, I guess they take care of any copyright issues, or how does
no,
that
so
work?
No, we have to handle that on
okay.
our own.
Okay.
Yeah, they'll handle the producing and the syndication of the content. But
okay.
if there's a copyright, any union obligations
right.
that we have to our orchestra, I mean, that's...
Okay.
That's on us to fundraise for with our
right.
our valued partners, but at the same time, it's just it's a small price to pay for that level of institutional marketing.
Yeah,
because we also control the intermission content, so
oh, great.
We're able
okay.
to say all these wonderful things that we truly believe about
yeah.
You know, the environment in which we get to present art.
Yeah.
So it's great.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, you mentioned earlier about a lot of the wealth of contemporary material now that is being developed, composed in opera, and that's really what this spring I think is about. Let's turn to the upcoming festival. I mean,
sure.
It looks like it has a theme to it, and just some really exciting work.
Yeah, we try to have a theme for each festival, and I have to admit that I was hired here as the guy who wanted to do historically informed productions of 19th century works. You know, but we saw a wonderful opportunity to have a festival this year that is more in line with some of our community, with our stout legal community in Delaware. We have this law themed festival this year. 2 of the 3 works happen to be contemporary, and they're all in English. So we start with Jake Heggie's Dead Man Walking with a libretto by Terrence McNally, after the book by Sister Helen Prejean, and the Oscar-winning movie Dead Man Walking. And it's the piece is now 20 years old, and I believe it is the most popularly performed opera that was written in my lifetime. I don't know that you can quote me on that, but it's mm-hmm. been done a lot. It's had lots and lots of productions, but never been done here in Delaware. And then we always try to have balance. We have tragedy and we have comedy. So that's the obviously the tragic side. The comedic side, we have a double bill of contemporary opera by Derek Wang, who is a practicing attorney, but also a classical composer. And that opera is called Scalia Ginsburg. He essentially has set their dissenting opinions, essentially, to tell the story of their unlikely friendship, which conveniently for us revolved around going to the opera together, which is great. But it's an extraordinary message for us to be able to put out there today that, hey, we can vehemently disagree about policy, but still not only be civil to each other, we can actually still be friends.
I was going to say, they couldn't be any more far apart on the bench,
right,
in their decisions.
True, but they were the dearest of friends.
Yeah,
You know, and that opera is paired with Gilbert and Sullivan's Trial by Jury.
Okay,
so that'll be a fun pairing. But yeah, Scalia Ginsburg is it's quite wonderful, and also The Dead Man Walking. One of the things that we appreciate about them is they're not necessarily telling you how you should feel. Scalia Ginsburg isn't telling you which one of these, you know, icons you should side with. It's just the very ending ensemble is we are different. We are one. And this idea that we can disagree, but still be friends. It's, as I said, we're super excited to be sending that message out to the world. I think we all need a little dose of that today. And Dead Man Walking, it doesn't necessarily tell you how to land on the issue of the death penalty. It just sort of shows that it's an incredibly complicated topic.
Right.
And the art serves as an opportunity to maybe reconsider your positions, but to have some dialogue and to really examine your own thinking, which is what we really believe art should do.
Well, and it's interesting. The storyline we were talking off air, I believe was also in the film with Susan Sarandon or Sarandon and Sean Penn. But, I mean, the storyline where the nun is feeling this empathy, this compassion for both the convicted as well as the families of you know, the victims.
Yeah.
And it's just heart-wrenching material.
It's an extraordinary story of this nun essentially being caught in the middle of this situation that just does not have any positive outcome, no matter how you look at it. And, you know, one very interesting choice that the composer of the opera and the librettist made when they wrote the opera is that there's no doubt throughout the whole story. The very first thing you see is the act, the murder, you know, and so there's the audience has no doubt that the protagonist is guilty. And that allows for a very interesting lens under which to sort of tell this story of ultimately redemption and forgiveness.
Right.
But it's a really extraordinary story, and we're delighted to share that Sister Helen Prejean will actually be with us for opening night, actually for our dress rehearsal and for opening night. So we'll be hopefully announcing some community events where people can come and meet her, but What a great opportunity for our cast to sort of meet the person who lived through this really, really difficult situation.
That's really exciting. Now, I assume at the time of this recording, the operas have been cast. You know who the singers are going to be.
We do.
And they're at least learning their work, if not in
they better be.
In rehearsal.
They better be. We start soon. I mean, we certainly have lots of finishing touches to put on things. At the time of this recording, we're just starting to build our sets, but everything should be ready to go. But yeah, we have Dead Man Walking is a rather large cast with lots of small parts. But we've got a couple wonderful folks returning to us. Tim Mix, who last appeared with us in Omeletto, will take on the role of Joseph Desrochers, and Alex Romano, who had a star turn for us in Semiramide, takes on the role of Sister Helen Prejean. Performance will be conducted by Maestro Jerome Shannon, who is, I think this will be his eighth production of Dead Man Walking.
Wow.
So we've got someone with so much experience with the work. Believe it's our director's first foray into this work.
Okay.
Octavio Cardenas will be directing. And then Scalia Ginsburg is quite fun. The young lady that is portraying Justice Ginsburg actually had her start in Opera Delaware's Family Opera
program. Oh, how about that?
She's from Delaware. Okay. And has gone on to have a major international career. And it's Jennifer Zetlin. Mm-hmm. And what a great vehicle to have her sort of return home.
Yeah, that's so great.
Yeah,
that's
great. We're very excited.
Now, are any of the singers overlapping in some of the different operas?
Great question, and it creates a great deal of scheduling Tetris.
But
we have some of the smaller roles are, and in one case, a rather significant role. Ben Wager, who also had his start in our chorus and has gone on to a major career, is singing the commentator in Scalia Ginsburg and also the warden in Dead Man Walking. So he's going to be doing some double duty. And then many of our young artists are involved in all the productions. I think four or five of our choristers also. So occasionally people might have to look down and look at their costume, see what they're wearing to figure out what show they're in.
You know, yeah,
there's a lot of moving pieces for sure.
Well, we've got about a minute left, so I don't want to lose sight on promoting where people can find information about your upcoming festival.
Terrific. If they visit operade.org, you can find information about all of our upcoming performances and information about each of the shows and how to get tickets. I will say that tickets are going rather quickly, especially to Scalia Ginsburg. It sort of has caught fire, I think, because of the amount that that Justice Ginsburg has been in the news lately. So it's going to be a tight fit for some of those performances. Right.
And the dates for the festival?
So we open on April 27th with Dead Man Walking, and that also repeats the following Saturday. We have a Saturday matinee on May 4th, which is new for us. And then Trial by Jury opens on Sunday, April 28th, and we close on May 3rd. So the idea is you could come to either weekend and see both shows, or you could split it up across 2 weeks.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Our guest today has been Brendan Cook, the General Director of Opera Delaware. It's been a pleasure chatting with you.
Great fun, Paul. Thanks so much.